May God add his blessing to the reading of the scriptures this morning, and may the words from my mouth be what we need to hear. Have you ever had rumors spread about you? Rumors that might have been true, might have not been, but still shouldn't have been spread. Have you ever been the subject of gossip? Have you ever overheard a comment about you that you weren't supposed to overhear? Knowing that someone is judging you, hearing that, knowing that someone is looking down on you, can really hurt. I know, I've experienced it myself. The Bible warns us against gossip and against judging other people. Relationships get damaged. Nothing good comes from gossiping. Nothing good comes from spreading rumors. A man named Eddie Bueno must have been a target of gossip or hurtful comments most of his life. Eddie grew up in a big family. He had 17 siblings. The Bueno family had an awful reputation for crime. The local newspapers in Denver, Colorado, called the Buenos Denver's biggest crime family. 15 of the 18 Bueno siblings had arrest records. I should say have, because this family is still, most of them are still alive. Unfortunately, the newspaper didn't mention that Eddie, who left the family at the age of 13, had never, ever been in any kind of trouble with the law. Imagine how it must have hurt him when he saw this huge spread, this article on the front page of the newspaper with a picture of his mom and dad at the top and then mugshots of each of the 18 kids. The paper made a mistake. Eddie had never been in trouble. And yet, they made it look as though it were a mugshot of him. And how that must have hurt. And it harmed his reputation so much that he left the area and he now lives somewhere in the Midwest. I wonder how Matthew, the tax collector, felt every time someone gossiped about him or looked down on him for what his profession had been. I told you, I told the kids earlier, he was a tax collector. He was hated by many. But he had earned that bad reputation, and he knew that. And there's something that surprises me, you know. In today's reading from Matthew 9, Matthew writes about something that happened to him, something totally unexpected. Jesus chose him, of all people, to be a disciple. And he even included in his writing a little detail that you'd think most people would leave out. The comment from one of the religious leaders questioning Jesus' choice to eat with no good sinners like Matthew. First, let's look at why it was totally unexpected that Jesus would even pick Matthew, a tax collector, as his disciple. Tax collectors, as I said, were hated by the Jewish people. They collected taxes for the Roman government, and then they took some more and added some more onto it to put in their own pockets. And the Roman government looked the other way and allowed that to happen. They were so despised that they were thrown out of the synagogues. No tax collectors were allowed there. They were considered so morally corrupt that they weren't even allowed to be witnesses in court, even if they had seen what had taken place, and nobody trusted them at all. So it makes sense that when the local religious leaders saw Jesus hanging out with these tax collectors, and Matthew was one of them, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? That doesn't seem right." But Jesus did choose him as his disciple. This was a defining moment in the life of Matthew. So I wonder, when he looked back at this moment years later, why he would include that comment that was made against him by the religious leaders. Why didn't he leave that little detail out? It didn't make him look good. It's a painful reminder of his past, that he had been corrupt. I think Matthew left it out, or left this detail in the story, because this story isn't about him. It's about the graciousness and the love of God and God's plan to bring in his kingdom through imperfect people. People like Matthew, people like me, people like you. Imperfect. One seminary professor put it this way. He said, Jesus calls people as they are, from where they are, being who they are. Why would he do that? Didn't he know that people would misunderstand? Didn't he care that this would make him a target for gossip? Why didn't he choose those strict religious people in his day, those morally upright citizens in the community? Why doesn't he do that today? Why does he use those of us who maybe have things in the past that we're not proud of? Why does he use people who have hurt others in the past and use them to bring his kingdom into this world? Universal Studio tried and failed to make a movie. They wanted to make a movie about the pop star Madonna. Madonna helped write the script for the movie, and she also planned to direct it. Madonna was also in charge of choosing which actress would play her part in the movie. And that's where the Madonna boot camp began. Three or four actresses were picked by Madonna. And then came the test. These three young or four young stars were drilled really hard. They were grueling 11-hour choreography sessions with Madonna's own choreographer, several script readings with Madonna, and more auditions where they had to sing Madonna songs to her and at her approval. And it was all for nothing. Because in spite of their hard work, the movie never did get past the auditioning part. Why didn't Jesus hold the discipleship boot camp to choose the best candidates? We do that when we want pastors, don't we? We look for the smartest. You failed this time. But we look for the bright ones. We look for the spiritual ones. We look for the ones that know the Bible and can teach us. Well, his answer to the religious leaders answers that question. He said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. Now listen. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners. There was a man named Reverend Barclay Thompson, who is an Episcopal priest in Little Rock, Arkansas. In one of his sermons, he shares a moment of life-changing grace that led him to become a follower of Jesus. He writes this, quote, "Sitting in a musty Gothic classroom at the University of Chicago, a Lutheran friend named Jay looked me squarely in the eye and said, 'Barclay, God is here, doing something with you.' I responded, 'No, Jay, I'm too much of a heathen for God.' But Barclay," Jay answered with a light behind his eyes that wasn't his own, "it's heathens that God calls. It's heathens that God calls." That's why Matthew included this hurtful question from the religious leaders in his story of his calling. He wanted his readers to understand the gracious love of God that calls us as we are, from where we are, no matter who we are. That phrase, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," is a quote from the prophet Hosea, whose ministry focused on speaking words of warning and hope to the kingdom of Israel more than 700 years before Jesus was even born. The full quote from Hosea says this, "For I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and the acknowledgement of God, rather than burnt offerings," from Hosea chapter 6. The Hebrew word here used for mercy, when he says, "I desire mercy," talks about goodness and kindness. I desire goodness and kindness, not burnt offerings and sacrifice. How do we please God? That's a good question, isn't it? How do we please God in our lives? We please God when our actions and our character reflect the goodness and the kindness of God. Hosea and Jesus both were saying the same thing, that God values a friendship with us over any religious rituals or any customs or any certain thing we might do here on a Sunday morning or we might do at home. He values his relationship with us over all that. He values changed lives over burnt offerings. If we really know and love God, our character will reflect that. It'll be changed to reflect the character of God. And then our lives will draw others to the goodness and kindness of God and the love of God. And that's God's plan for all us humans. We make it so difficult sometimes. I was meeting recently with a group of pastors, and someone said something that was so profound to me and made so much sense. He said, "Someday, I think we're going to be in heaven, and I think God's going to take all of us pastors and put us in one big room, and he's going to look at us, and he's going to say, 'Guys, I just have one,' and girls, 'I just have one question for you. What was so difficult about love one another? What was so difficult about it?'" I desire mercy, not sacrifice. God values. God has a plan for all of us humans. He has a plan to work through average sinners like us, imperfect people like us. Will I go out this week and make some mistakes? You darn bet I will. Will I do some things I shouldn't have done? Yeah, probably. But will God use me anyway? Yes, God will use me anyway. Just like he used Matthew. Just like he'll use you. Zach Lambert, a pastor at a church in Austin, Texas, posted on social media a conversation that he had with a lady who visited his church. The woman who was in a wheelchair had no family, and she had only one friend in the city of Austin. She told the pastor that she'd been waiting 18 months for city services to come and to install a wheelchair ramp at her house. And when the pastor asked how the church could help, the woman said, "Well, could you just put in a good word for me with the city services people?" And the pastor said, "Well, that doesn't seem like it's going to help much. How about if we send a group of people from our church over to your house and we install that wheelchair ramp instead?" The woman said, "You would do that?" And his answer was, "Of course. That's what the family of God is all about. That's what we do." And I think Matthew's story teaches us that it is people like you and like me who have received the unearned, undeserved mercy of God and the love of God that are best able to share that love and that mercy and that graciousness with others. If you're already full of your own good works, like those guys back in the Old Testament, or like those guys back in the story, the Pharisees, if you're full of your own full self-righteousness, you don't need to know much about God's mercy. And you'll never fall to your knees in gratitude and awe at all that God's done for you. You'll never be humble and say, "God, I cannot thank you enough for all that you've done for me in this life. I cannot thank you enough that you would be so merciful and so kind and good and giving to me. I did nothing to deserve it." And gratitude That kind of gratitude and awe and humility are powerful proof to the world that you are a person whose life has been changed by God. When writer Denise Locke and her husband moved to North Carolina, she started volunteering at a local soup kitchen. She says that she did it because she was hoping that it would make her more compassionate, a kinder person. And then she soon realized that she was doing her volunteer work with the wrong attitude. As the months passed, she noticed that she was developing real relationships with these people, the people who she served at the soup kitchen. Instead of seeing them as nameless faces passing by, she saw them as friends, people she cared about and knew by name. She began praying for her new friends, which deepened her relationship with them even more. You want to get closer to a friend, a relative? Pray for them. Keep them in your prayers. I guarantee you'll grow closer to them. She writes, I made sure Billy got a can of the Mountain Dew that he loved. I reminisced with Barbara, who grew up in the same hometown as I did. I chatted with Donnie while I cut his meat because he couldn't do it with his severe arthritis. The so glad to see yous and the hugs multiplied. What happened? I developed relationships. These folks became dear to me. Going to the soup kitchen wasn't an act of sacrifice. It was a place where I hung out with the people that I cared about. In Matthew 9, the Pharisees looked around the house and they saw tax collectors and sinners. But Jesus didn't see tax collectors and sinners. He saw people that he loved and that he cared about, people that he wanted to hang out with, and he knew their names. Why did Jesus choose the least liked, the least powerful, the least likely people to be his disciples? Because he loved them, because he knew that God would work through them, and because he knew that those who have received the abundant mercy of God are the best people in the world to share that abundant mercy. Matthew's story shows us that God is not keeping score of our sins. There's no tally sheet. Each one of those sins before they've been committed have already been forgiven. God is not standing and waiting to judge us. No, God is inviting all of us, even people like you and me, if you can imagine, into his mercy and love, and then sending us out to share that mercy and that love with others. Let's do those things. Amen.